You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and bzzz, that's an alarm clock, because here's a wake-up call kind of chat about how to stop white-knuckling your life to live one you actually like. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am over the moon excited about today's sponsor. Friend, this is my dream sponsor. The, oh my God, is this real life sponsor? The sponsor I've been dreaming about since I was a little girl, winning card-giving holidays with her reliable tearjerkers, ending fights with soul-spilling letters left on people's pillows, and surviving college by avoiding all test-taking classes and taking only essay-writing ones. No, this sponsor is not a pen or a computer or those yellow Papermate Sharpwriter number 2 mechanical pencils that you turn the tip of, which I've used religiously for 2 decades. This sponsor is the thing I've been writing up to my whole life. It's my book. My first freaking real life will live in stores if stores ever open up again, but can live on your shelf right this second book. Party in Your Plants, which has been called in an Amazon review as the best plant-based book ever, as well as a cookbook that's way more than a cookbook, and a plant party heaven. Readers have also said that it's the best healthy living guide for your kitchen that you must purchase pronto. And so I'm here to tell you that you can promptly purchase Party in Your Plants, 100-plus plant-based recipes and problem-solving strategies to help you eat healthier without hating your life, anywhere books are safely and sanitarily sold. PartyInYourPlants.com will take you to all the major retailers, or you can just hop your fingers over to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, or Walmart to buy yourself and your best friend and their best friend a copy today. That's partyinyourplants.com to grab a copy or 19 of my book that Amazon readers say you must add to your cookbook stack ASAP, because it gets all the thumbs ups. My new friend, Susie Moore, is an incredibly successful and genuinely glass half full kind of beautifully accented gal. Our chat was a necessary breath of fresh air and was chock full of the kind of life-changing wisdom that I think my Party and My Plants listeners crave, like cookies, soul cookies. Gluten-free and easy to digest. Susie is a kick-ass coach, writer, TV personality, and author. Her latest book is called Stop Checking Your Likes, Shake Off the Need for Approval, and Live an Incredible Life. As we mentioned in this talk, she has done all of this and more without a single college degree. And that, my friend, goes to show that lack of official credentials is way less harmful than lack of confidence and self-limiting beliefs. Listen to this episode and you will be motivated to quit checking your damn likes and use that energy to instead challenge the negative thoughts swirling around in your damn brain like a smoothie. Okay, thanks. Let's roll the tape to what my podcast assistant Sinead says is one of my strongest interviews yet. Susie, thank you so much for coming on the Party in My Plants podcast.
I'm so excited to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I love your accent. And people should not think you are where your accent sounds. You're in Miami, right?
I am in Miami, Florida. Yes. So I have to say, I feel like it's heaven down here.
I mean, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it freaking is.
I decided last year, I was like, I just want to live in the place where I go like every year and have the best time of my life. So why not?
That's amazing. I mean, during this pandemic, when we've been in quarantine, like in these awful months of like of the March and April, that's like fake spring, you know, it's like maybe technically spring, but it's actually the grossest part of winter. Every day I wake up and say to my husband, why don't we live somewhere that's sunny every day? Like, why? We have a choice. We have free will. Why? So we might have to follow your lead.
You know, it's so interestingly, I mean, if we could just kick off with this, I love talking about the fact that we have complete control over our lives, right? And often we just think, oh, I couldn't move, or I have to be near my parents or near my friends. In a lot of cases, or in most cases, there's so much more freedom, so many more choices and options.
So, okay, this is literally what you do. This is what you help people with. So yes. Perfection, let's roll right into that. How did you go from, I mean, you had a very different upbringing, a challenging upbringing. It's not like you were given life on a silver spoon or whatever the saying is. how did you take your, you know, this idea, this belief system that we can do whatever the hell we want?
Well, it's such a good question. I'm happy we're starting there because, you know, I think even if you don't have an upbringing like mine, and I do share this in my book, I speak about being on welfare, about, you know, losing my dad to addiction, moving around a lot. I mean, all sorts of life experiences that could bring a lot of shame. Mm-hmm. The reason I wanted to just be so open about those is because even if your life experiences don't match that, and in a lot of cases they won't because some of my stories are quite bizarre. But if you have anything, right, anything in your history, even if it's recent history, not, you know, childhood history, it doesn't have to be in the driver's seat of your life. It doesn't have to be the force that kind of guides your decisions. And it doesn't even have to be something that defines you.
Yeah.
And I feel so strongly about this. I mean, I wanted to just put out, you know, some stuff that I've experienced, because I feel like we all have something that we're either hiding or something that we feel, you know, this kind of puts me in that not good enough box in this area, you know, whatever it may be. And I know that as human beings, our worthiness is completely fixed and undeletable, no matter what, no matter where you're from, no matter what you've done. And if we could just allow this in a little bit more, just a little bit more, our lives just completely change.
Yeah. Well, how did you understand that? How did you decide to not let your circumstances define you? Because a lot of people, I mean, even, you know, I'll talk to my mom and I'll say, blah, blah, blah is acting this way. And she'll be like, oh, well, blah, blah, blah was raised like this. And you know who blah, blah, blah's mom is. Why do you think she acts that way? And I'm always like, that doesn't mean, like, you can act any way you want. It doesn't matter who your mom is or how you were raised. But some people, my mom's in her 70s, like, she has this belief system that, like, we are our circumstances. And how did you escape that? And how do you help others, like my mom? Mom, if you're listening, hi. reframe.
Yeah. Well, I think your mom has a point, right? Like, there are things that happen to all of us, and they do have an impact. They, in a lot of ways, I think sometimes this is how suffering can be helpful in a way. I think that if we've suffered, we can be very compassionate. It makes us less judgmental towards other people. It opens up a different part of our heart, whatever our suffering may be. And I do like to ask myself, you know, if somebody is behaving in a way that I find interesting, right? Or in a way that surprises me, I always think, you know, what has happened to this person mm-hmm. that they are so defensive or that they're so angry, like whatever it may be. It's always, I think, just so helpful to have some curiosity around it. But I feel like at our core, I think that we all know that we're powerful. Mm. Right? I think that, like, if you see a child anywhere, right, just being free, being who they are, they're not questioning, you know, is it okay that I'm taking up space?
Yeah.
How can I prove myself amongst these other kids to show that I can play too? We just kind of go for it, right? So I think that at our core, we know it. We just learn some unhealthy things along the way that aren't helpful. And I just feel like I'm connected to myself. I'm just kind of connected. I tune in. And I also, which is a huge help, I discovered self-help really early, self-help books. Mm-hmm. And I consume them all. Like, Talia, I don't know how people survive out there without self-help consumption. I'm like, I don't know how you guys are all doing it, because I consume like personal development material all the time. And frankly, a lot of it is the same.
Yes.
But it's told in different ways.
Yes.
I still love it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just reminds me of this truth that, you know, we're in control. We don't have to abdicate power and responsibility. so much is just, you know, within us. Everything has to begin with us. So I feel like I discovered I had access to wisdom early just by reading, and I don't question it. I follow what feels good, and I have a positive expectation for my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, usually to get to a place that you're describing, you had to have at one point been in the opposite place. Is that right? I mean, you say your mission is to help women live lives they actually like, which yeah. I assume means either at one point you were a woman not living a life you actually liked, or you've seen many women not living lives they like. So
yeah,
why is that your mission? How did that become your thing?
Well, it's so funny, right? Like how living a life that you like, that is something that feels uncommon, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I mean, how bad do we all have it really in a lot of cases? I mean, what do you think about it? To even have a Wi-Fi connection, to be listening to a podcast, like what a blessing, right? Like there is so much that we just, you know, skip over, overlook, because we're thinking about what might be missing in our lives. And I feel as if, I mean, I've had plenty of things that have happened to me where I've not, you know, felt great. So my family, of course, being very strange, I was divorced in my early 20s. Okay. I've had my various life experiences of ups and downs, but I think just through the power of observation and seeing that there's generally, like if you meet a person who's pretty optimistic and interprets the world in a way that's healthy for them, it's quite a rarity, isn't it? Like
yeah.
It's so much easier to be heavy. Like it is so much easier to be cynical. It is so much easier. It's lazy. Like RuPaul said, this negativity is lazy because it requires nothing of you, absolutely nothing. And I remember even when I was a kid living in shelters, which are for victims of domestic violence, my mom and my sister and me lived in many of them. Mm. I would just see like so many people who are suffering, who I could just tell were strong, who were powerful, who were just kind of making some decisions that they could, you know, they could be choosing something else. I realized this young, and I just felt like this kind of resolute promise that that wasn't going to be my life. Like my life was going to be like healthy and I was going to be in control. And one day maybe I'd have like a nice normal marriage. That was only my expectation. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, like when you realize that we all have options, right? We have choices, and the responsibility has to lie with us. That's where it feels scary, but that's also where all of your freedom is.
100%. Yeah, I just underlined decisions. That's it. It's just one decision at a time. I remember, I mean, if you've read a lot of self, I read that you read over 550 self-help books.
Mm-hmm. It would be more now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've probably tied you. I mean, I don't know. Yes, I haven't tallied.
Yeah.
But I was going to say one of the first I read was Brian Tracy's book, I think Goals, where he says one of the most important things you do. I think it's like the first chapter where he's like, you just have to take responsibility for your life.
Yes.
Like from here on out, everything is you. Like it is no one else. It's everything is your responsibility. And it sounds like when you were in those shelters, you were looking around and realizing like everything that happens from here forth is a decision that I make. Yes. It's a decision to do something or not do something, to be powerful or be powerless. And you've just built a life based on one decision at a time.
Yes. And it's so funny, right? I mean, there's a chapter in my book called Good News, It's Your Fault, right? It's like when you take responsibility, right? I mean, when there's nobody else to blame, I mean, how free is your life? You're not at the mercy of anything.
Yeah.
It's not like, wait, this is how my boss treats me. This is how, you know, my mother-in-law treats me. This is how my sister treats me. This is how my best friend, I'm always the beta to her alpha. This is how she treats me. It's like, nope. None of those things are true, right? It's just like your interpretation, what you're allowing. And yeah, so I feel like it's almost like the first rule for life, right?
Or
self-directed life. Absolutely.
Yeah, self-directed. I like that. So, okay, if somebody's listening and they're like, wait a minute, my mom treats me a certain way. My sister treats me a way. Like my boss treats me a way. Mm. That's a fact. How do you empower somebody to do something about it?
Well, this is kind of where I love to question beliefs and dive in a little bit to them. So if somebody says, you know, my boss treats me like shit, right? Which is why I hate my job, right? Mm-hmm. Or which is why I'm miserable, right? Like my boss treats me badly, which is why I'm miserable, right? This is in traditional psychology, we follow the cause and effect model, right? So that would be a cause and effect. My boss treats me badly, cause, and then the effect is, and I'm miserable, right? Mm-hmm. What I love to do with that cause and effect model is flip it. So you take the effect, right, which is I'm miserable, and then think, oh, okay, so this effect, I'm miserable. Sometimes we like to be miserable, right? It means that we can be negative. It means that we can be critical. It means that we can stay home and eat ice cream and watch TV and be tired, whatever it may be. We want to be miserable, and so we'll blame our boss. But I love to flip the cause and effect. It takes courage to do this.
Yes.
You can do it with anything. Somebody could say, you know, I can't trust men or women because, you know, there was domestic abuse in my family and my parents had a really ugly divorce. I would say, again, but someone has to voluntarily want to do this work. I would say, okay, well, maybe being with somebody requires vulnerability, courage, you being really seen. And that's scary. That's going to require something of you. So let's blame your parents or blame whatever it is that you experienced. So again, it's not like easy, fun stuff to do. I mean, it can be, but what you kind of understand, like so much of like this cause and effect model, which we kind of subscribe to, especially because we come up with these very good justifiable excuses in our life that other people accept and we get sympathy for. I mean, they're still excuses, right? And you either have excuses or results, one or the other. And so if an area of your life isn't satisfactory to you, then it's worth investigating your belief around it and seeing how you can flip it. Because if the cause and effect model were true, that would mean that every single person in the world who has a bad boss would be miserable. Or every single person who had, you know, parents who had a bad divorce would never be happily in love. So it kind of just, it takes out like the false nature of so much of what it is that we believe, because we simply like to be in the victim mode sometimes.
Well, how about, I mean, here's a perfect example. You write for major media companies. You're a, what, two-time author now? This is your second book you're launching?
Yeah, that's right.
And you're a life coach. You're like on TV all the time. You were something big at a Fortune 500 company, big salary, but you don't have any formal credentials. You have a high school degree.
This is my favorite thing to talk about. Can I just say I'm so happy you brought this up?
Yes, great. Leah. I mean, what an effect that you busted the cause or whatever.
And by the way, this is America. Where college, you know, I mean, first of all, I love education. I'm on the self-educated side, right? But I love education. It's not a diseducation, of course. But I mean, you don't need it. I know that that's true. Confidence is the most important thing, right? The most important thing that we can foster. And when you are confident, you create what's called the confidence competence loop, which we speak about in coaching, meaning if you go for it, you become competent because you have to do the things that you're putting yourself forward for, which then it makes you more confident to go for more, to become competent in. And so, yeah, I love speaking about my lack of any qualifications, zero, nada, zip, none, right? Zero, because I want to show what is available, right? What's possible for somebody else. Yeah. And when people come to me, they say, well, I didn't go to college. I didn't. And I'm like, oh, neither did I. I'm right there with you, girl. Like, I feel like this is something that it kind of excuse weakening. And it just shows you like how powerful we are as humans, like our intention, our action. I find it extremely exciting.
Well, tell me, wait, do that confidence competence loop again. You did it fast. Do it slow-mo.
Yeah. So if somebody's confident, think about it. Like if you are really confident, what's one thing that you might go for that you haven't gone for right now? Like, is there something?
Yeah. I mean, I pitched myself on bigger podcasts.
Fantastic. Okay, there you go. So if you had the full confidence to do that, right, you would then do it, right? Because confidence creates action. It really just breeds action.
Right.
And then because success is volume, really, right? Success is volume.
Is that true?
Yes, it is. It is.
Okay, because I told you before we press record that I've been seeing you in my Facebook feed for freaking months with this ad of you on the Today Show. And it's like, I don't have a publicist. I've never played for a publicist, but I'm on all these, you know, TV shows and all the major media. Like, you can do it too. And I've been seeing you everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. And this is just coming back right this very second to what you're saying to me right now. And so are you saying one of the secrets that you teach people in getting on the media, in the media, on these big shows is the, you know, the numbers game here, the volume?
Absolutely. Mm. The difference between people who are getting media and those who aren't, and people who are pitching and those who aren't. That's it. That's the difference, right? And it's not the most talented, not the most qualified, but there are some techniques and strategies, absolutely, that you want to nail, but you can know all the strategies in the world and have all the knowledge, but take no action and you'll end up nowhere. Right? So it's always going to be the action that wins. If you are feeling really confident about pitching bigger podcasts for yourself, to my book, etc., you would then do it, right? You take the action. Mm-hmm. And then the action would result in wins, right? Not 100% of the time, but there would be wins that you'd be getting because you'd mm-hmm. be putting yourself in the arena to win. And then you'd do those big podcasts because you booked them. And then that would create more confidence, right?
Right.
Become more and more competent, and it keeps going. It is a gorgeous cycle.
Wow.
So
yeah. Okay. Easy. I mean, that makes so much sense.
Absolutely. But it has to start with confidence, right? It doesn't start with competence.
Right, right, right.
So when it comes to confidence, for example, pitching yourself on podcasts, confidence, okay, this is my definition of it. Confidence is simply the willingness to experience negative emotion.
Oh.
So when we're afraid to do something, it's because, oh, might get rejected, might get criticized, might fail.
Mm-hmm. Might be uncomfortable.
Yes,
will
exactly.
be uncomfortable.
Be uncomfortable. What's the worst that could happen to you? It's a feeling. A feeling
right.
of discomfort. Or a feeling of disappointment, or a feeling that will pass through your body because all emotions are temporary, good and bad. So the confident among us are just simply more willing to tolerate negative emotion.
That's perfect.
Yeah, but it's much easier to hide, right? To be like, ah, no. But it's only easier to hide in the short term. In the long term, you just realize that your life isn't what you want. And then you look around and you realize, oh my gosh, this wasn't my idea. This isn't what I expected. And when you look back, you can often just like identify times when you didn't have the courage to go for it. And that's the biggest cause of regret.
Oh, 1,000,000%. I mean, I speak on boldness and, you know, confidence as well, actually. And I always just say between you and what you want is uncomfortability,
yeah.
discomfort.
Yeah.
That's it.
Absolutely.
You just have to get uncomfortable and that's it. And yeah, everything you're saying, that makes sense. It's just a temporary feel. I mean, yeah, boom. And I wrote this down. I used to do stand-up comedy and I learned from comedians that like the only difference between like an unsuccessful and a successful comedian is the successful one never stopped.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's it. Like you just keep on going and eventually you will be successful. But it's very hard in many fields, especially comedy, to keep grinding away. So that's why there's very few successful comedians.
I think that's true in every single field, right? Mm. It's like success and failure are the same road, right? Success is just further down the road.
Huh.
But most people just like, they just park, they get comfy. They're like, I've gone far enough. Or, you know, this is quite a nice spot here. This is where I'll stay. That's the only way to guarantee your failure, though, to stop. Right, with anything, with like online dating, fertility treatments, writing a book, like whatever it is, the only way to guarantee your failure is to stop. So if you're keeping on going, even if it's slowly, if you still have momentum, like awesome. Like that is almost like the only thing that we have to do.
While we're on the topic of making healthy eating a whole lot less hellish, although that's what we're always on the topic of here on the Party of My Plants podcast, one of my favorite essential non-helly healthy staples, as you probably know by now, is Amazing Grass Greens Powder. And I am so excited that Amazing Grass is sponsoring this podcast episode. I truly, honestly, wholeheartedly adore Amazing Grass's amazing grasses, which I'm sure you're well aware of if you follow me on Instagram. Their green superfood powders are an insanely tasty blend of nutritious greens, phytonutrient-packed fruits, veggies, grasses, digestive enzymes, and probiotics that I can't and I don't want to live without. And it just so happens that one of the kitchen tools I'm going to outline in today's episode is the vehicle through which I enjoy Amazing Grass. Amazing. To make Amazing Grass even more amazing, they're offering Party in My Plants podcast listeners 40% off. Yes, 40%, not just some measly 10%, 40% off. That's almost half off your Amazing Grass order. If you go to their website, amazinggrass.com, and use coupon code PLANTPARTY40 at checkout. That's PLANTPARTY40 at checkout on amazinggrass.com. But what if we want to just chill? Like, you're so successful, you're happy, you're in Miami, you have your second book, blah, blah, blah. Do you ever feel like you can just chill? Or do you feel that if, like, what's the difference between complacency and, you know, like, how does that fit into it?
I love this conversation with you. Could I just say, this is like the best. Okay, so I have an uncommon answer to this, right?
I'm not surprised.
I feel like I'm chill. I feel like I'm chill all the time.
You seem very chill, honestly.
I have happy hour every day at home. I sleep in. Like, I go for a walk if I want. I feel like almost like it's funny. I feel like I'm busy, you know, some of the time, not all the time, but I almost feel like I'm not really working. I don't know. I mean, I don't feel stressed out. And my life, I feel like I have a lot of free time. I'm not speaking pandemic free time. I feel like I have a lot of free time always. I'm not rushed. And so I don't feel like there has to be you're hustling or relaxing. Why can't, you know, working and relaxing coexist? Like, why can't it be more balanced? Why can't it all be easier? My mantra is let it be easy. And I feel like that's something we don't allow ourselves because this issue of worldliness keeps coming up. And we think that we have to be like sweating, hustling, proving ourselves, working till our eyes bleed, show that, you know, we're doing everything required. You know, it's okay that I'm here. Look at me. I'm doing all the things. I'm suffering. There's no medal for that at the end of it all. Right? No one's going to give you a medal. You suffered the most. I think that we can have fun and success can be fun and it doesn't have to be at the cost of anything else.
Okay, so as you were saying that, I'm zooping into your book, which I've read, and there's a chunk where it talks about, like, I don't know what you call it, but basically like flipping the negative comments. So when you talk about how you did something with Kris Jenner and it got posted on Instagram and then you saw all these horrible comments that people were leaving and then you learned how to flip the negative comments. So if somebody just heard you say like, I'm happy all the time, I'm successful, I'm not stressed, there could be some things, you know, in their minds. And so talk to me about, you know, you wrote, the next time you feel hurt by someone, don't think what's wrong with me, think instead what happened to this person. So I just feel like if this was a comment on Instagram, people would be leaving things that might be hurtful. So how do you go about dealing with pushback when you say something as joyful as what you just said and people might be like, oh, she's just lucky, or like, oh, it must be nice. Like, how do you deal with that?
And by the way, that happens all the time. And it's okay. Like, it's absolutely okay. I don't defend myself ever. Byron Katie says that defense is the first act of war. Right. And if I'm defenseless, right, I'm completely safe in my lack of defense, there is no momentum. There's nowhere like forward for that to go. And I feel like truly, so one of the reasons I share a lot of my stories is, of course, I want to normalize any kind of weird experiences that anybody's had, because we've all had them. Our experiences aren't the same, but our emotions are, or, you know, our emotions are universal. And so I share a lot of my stories because I also want to explain that I didn't have this privilege. I didn't even go to college. Like, the difficult, I guess, experiences or unconventional experiences, you know, I've experienced them. It's not like everything was so easy for me or I was so lucky. I don't think anyone really would have chosen, you know, the way that I started out.
You walked in on your dad with some prostitutes.
Yeah, I did. And that's not even the weirdest thing, you know what I'm saying? I want to put those out there, just, you know, because, but, you know, for my various reasons. But if somebody is responding or reacting to my comment or my point of view on something, that's okay. I mean, once I create my work, do my thing, my job then ends, and everyone else is allowed to respond. It isn't just one way. So I think it's okay. And frankly, I think it's really healthy to not pay too much attention to the bad or the good, just to be kind of in a place where, you know, you just have to keep coming back to yourself to think about what it is you want to create and say next.
Okay, well, perfect segue on into your new book. It's called Stop Checking Your Likes.
Yes.
How did you decide to take everything that you stand for and now put it into like a very Instagram and social media specific book that's kind of like a confidence guide through the lens of social media?
Well, the reason I called it Stop Checking Your Likes is because, look, social media isn't the enemy. I love it. I have a lot of fun on social media. But it's just, frankly, topical, right? It's topical and current. Stop Checking Your Likes. Everybody knows what that means when they read the title. And also, nothing's changed, really. But social media has just made it far easier to access everyone's points of view, opinions about us, liking us or not liking us. And it's this kind of 24/7 access to our own kind of popularity platform, if that's how we choose to interpret it. Yeah. And the world's gone mad, frankly, completely mad. And I just thought it was like a fun, fresh take on like a problem we have. But yeah, it's not a social media book. It's about, you know, plenty of other things. But I feel like so many of our problems just start at this. Okay, do you love me yet? Do you like me yet? Like, that's the question that we're asking almost everybody that we meet virtually in real life. And this title just kind of felt right for me.
I feel like you wrote it for me, because like, I can just be cruising through my day, feeling confident, feeling happy, feeling chill, and then open that stupid little app with the stupid little square pictures, and then it's all downhill from there. I mean, that app holds so much weight in my own existence. It's horrible. And I feel like, as a human, I mean, I used to feel like, as a business owner, you know, I'm indebted to Instagram. I can't get off of it. I have to be on social media. But now I feel like even a person who doesn't have a business, just like a person, feels like, I know a lot of people that started Instagram accounts or Facebook accounts. Now, like, my mom just got an Instagram because she was having FOMO of all my Instagram lives. Like, I think right now our whole world is, we're all literally isolated. Everyone's taking to social media. So now people feel like just this constant stream of FOMO and then the addiction. Like, oh, how do we even be, what do I do? What do we do?
Well, it's very common. It's very common, you know, this question. And the thing is, social media isn't the problem. Right. Like, we can find anything to blame if we want to have a gripe or to feel bad or something, you know. And so it's like, what is it? Like, what's your relationship with it? Like, what are you managing your mind before you go and interpret how the world's receiving you? You know, I mean, I feel like there are things you can do. You can block it. You can take breaks. Again, very healthy to do this with anything. But we can't blame something else for us feeling bad.
Oh, back really, to that now.
Yeah. I'm like, sorry. Yeah, but the thing is, if we want a reason to feel like unhappy or upset or offended, like, we will find reasons. Like, we all know that person who walks around in the world looking for reasons to be offended. We all know at least one person like that.
Totally. But there are times where I'm feeling great, as I just said. It's almost like I'll open the app to bring me down.
Maybe that's an upper limit problem.
I think it's an upper limb. Oh, that's my favorite book in the world.
The Big Leap. Self-help readers, right?
I know. Everyone. I've recommended it on like 1,000 podcasts now. The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. So good. Well, when you said it's not social media that is what, so I wrote down, what was the problem before? Because I'm just trying to think of my life before social media. Like, what was it that was causing people this level of misery before we could look into people's lives all the time?
Yeah, it's our inability to accept our inherent worthiness. Because think about it, our moms at the playground or whatever were dealing with shit with each other. You know, like, they didn't need a social media platform to do that. Like, even when I was like, you know, when I was younger, you know, there was no social media, there was plenty of comparison and mean stuff that happened. It's like, it's not to blame. It's just kind of amplified it, given it a microphone, made it very, very public. So instead of two mums in a playground, it's two mums and their 700 followers each who pay attention to a lot, right? The problem is with us, right? It's our inability to accept our inherent, fixed, undeletable, permanent worthiness, which we have whether we like it or not. Whether we accept it or not, it's just there. And those of us who don't accept it, we know it because we're always proving ourselves. Or we always feel like we have to justify why we're here, why we're taking up space, why it's okay that we have a voice, why it's okay that we're here breathing air, frankly.
Wow. How do we start to feel more worthy?
Oh, what a big question.
I want the three-step process, please.
And it only takes 30 seconds. Right? I mean, really, this is I think this is humankind's only problem, like our inability to accept our own worthiness. That's why we fight with each other, right? It's why we criticize each other. It's why we criticize ourselves. I tell this kind of funny story, I guess, in the book. I'm like, okay, so just say, you know, you went hiking, Talia, or skiing somewhere with a bunch of people, and you got separated from the group, and you were lost, and it was getting dark, and the weather conditions were worsening. Like, would that group say, okay, wait, let's do a quick assessment. Is Talia worth rescuing? Is she verified on Instagram? is she thin? Does she submit her taxes on time? Like, Wait, let's see. It's a quick roundup. Yeah, no, not tonight. Forget her. Like, she can just die out there. Like, our human life is so permanently what? Like, there is, if you were a felon, we would rescue you. Mm-hmm. Right? So why, how can that not translate to every realm if it's true in the physical realm?
Huh.
It's actually, it can be a process, but I just think it's an awakening.
It's
like
a decision. Yeah.
It's a decision and a bit of a shake that you have to give yourself. Like, why am I arguing with this? And think about it. All the things that had to happen for you to be alive right now, like how your parents met, how their parents met, for you to still be alive, to even like make it through the birth process. It's miraculous. Right. Human life is miraculous. You want to argue with that? Go ahead. I'm not.
Okay, well, this makes me think of my favorite part of your book, in which you, it's like the humor section about, what is it called?
So what?
The humor chapter.
Oh, the comedy colored glasses. Yeah.
Yes. Obviously, that's my favorite section where you write, and I quote, "Guess what? Death has 100% success rate. It's coming for all of us. The next time you need a reality check, go to the graveyard. I'm being serious. I love cemeteries. They remind me that everything is temporary." And then you talk about, so the next time I want to freak out because I have to wait a full 7 minutes for a subway train, you know, you like think of the cemeteries and the headstones. And I love that. I mean, and you like suggest people put like, you have like a cemetery on the back of your phone, your like screensaver or whatever on your phone.
I collect photos of cemeteries. I love them. I love going to them. If ever we drive by, I would go slow down. I just want to look at the graveyard.
Okay, tell me more about that, please.
Oh my gosh, I'm obsessed. Well, I'm going to be, depending on what you want to do with your remains one day, it doesn't really matter because you're not there anymore. But like, that's where we're all ending up. Frankly, with a weathered, beaten down headstone that doesn't even say your name anymore because it's been rained upon and blown wind upon for decades, like years. That's where you're going to be. There's going to be no record even of your life. Did you know that even in hospitals, after a certain period, if a patient is deceased, they just get rid of your file? It doesn't even exist anymore.
Oh, well, this is really uplifting. Thank you for coming on today. Well, shedding some light.
I find it so uplifting. I'm like, amazing. So what am I afraid of? Yeah. What is so scary then? I'm like, no, even one generation from now, like, so for example, I love to listen to and Ziggler. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but I love them. They're kind of old business, Southern businessmen in the 60s, and they created a lot of kind of great books, content, etc.
Who is it? You cut out for one sec.
Jim Rohn and Zig Ziglar.
Oh yeah, are they? Yeah. Are they still alive?
No.
Oh, okay, I didn't think so.
Hit their peak in the 60s. So, but I'm a 36-year-old woman listening to, reading to Jim Rohn, Zig Ziglar. I don't know many other 36-year-old women listening to Jim and Zig. Right, like they were huge. Like they were, I mean, they were of their time, like owning it.
Yeah, and I think Zig Ziglar's son is still like a dude, right?
Yeah, they have a family business, and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. I love all of their work, but I'm guessing, and I'm not even just speaking about 36-year-old women. I don't know. I doubt many people are consuming their stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's going to be like one generation away from me. No one's going to be listening to me anymore. Mm-hmm. So what am I so worried about? Like my ego would be at such like high speed. Like my ego would be out of control if I worried so much about what I'm putting out there with this weird perfectionist mind, which I'm the opposite of, but having a weird perfectionist mind thinking that it's so meaningful. Like, yeah, it means something. Create, like do your thing, but don't give it like this huge gravitas. Like be light, like take it, like have it, like you have some perspective here. It really helps. I think it really helps us create like self-soothe and see the way bigger picture.
I'm so with you. I do this daily. I mean, whenever I'm about to stress out about something, or if my husband, I'm not a perfectionist in the slightest, but he is. And when we were planning our wedding, like he got upset about the bread basket that we were going to put on our tables. Like that was a thing for him.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a problem, but we made it through. But I had to keep reminding him of the bigger picture in life. I was like, dude, when we're on our deathbed, are we going to give a shit about our bread baskets? Come on now. But I think about that all the time.
No one's paying attention to your bread basket either. Like that. No. I think that's also important, right? Because we often care about something because we're worried about what everyone else is thinking of the thing.
Right. You're right. That's exactly what it was. He was like thinking, you know, are people going to think these are nice enough or do these reflect us enough? Yeah, it wasn't like his own because he knew he wasn't going to be, you know, fondling the breadbasket at our wedding. I think he was thinking, what are other people going to think of our breadbasket? You're right. So bringing it back into social media, that's the perfect, you know, segue there.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's the thing. And the thing is, everyone at a wedding is just like, yes, bread, thank you, I'm starving. No one cares, right? Like, it's so funny. No one's obsessed with us. We think they are, right? Because we're obsessed with ourselves. Of course, we're the only thinker in our universe, in our mind, but everybody is just worrying. Did anyone notice that I gained weight in this dress? Wait, are my pants going to pop? Oh my gosh, I really want a cigarette. Have I completely regressed? Like, everyone is so worried about themselves all the time that they're not focusing on all the small things that we think they are.
Well, it's hard because of those likes. I mean, they are programmed with very smart people to... They've changed like our brain, you know, like, and they trigger them, they time them. So we get that dopamine. So we come back. I mean, how do we beat that when we're like, you know, the victim of like science and psychology and technology?
Well, there are people in the world who have social media who have fun with it and who don't worry so much about the likes. Like, and if that's possible and true for some people, it's true for all of us. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we like to be frantic, right? We're like, there's nothing. I mean, you see it. You see this momentum in people sometimes, indignant. Can you believe that this person? And I'm like, you're enjoying this. Like, you pretend, right? It's like, oh, okay, yep, this bad thing happened to you. You're enjoying this. Listen to you. Like, you're finding all these reasons. And for a second, even your anger makes you feel powerful. Yeah. I understand, right? We're human beings. But social media certainly isn't the enemy. If it weren't that, it'd be something else. We'll always find replacements to feed our needs, for our excuses to be angry, our excuses to go on rants, like whatever it may be. And again, like, no one's putting a phone in your face with a gun to your head. Look, check, comment. Like, we have complete free will, and it is such a privilege to have the things that we have. Like, I think, wow, like, how cool that I can sell my book, you know, at home while I'm drinking wine, just talking about it. Like, I can press something and people can see me. Like, that, it's a tiny shift, right? But there's no victimhood. Like, there doesn't have to be like a victim conversation around social media.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, going back to the confidence competence loop, which I'm obsessed with now, it seems like there's a middle thing of like levity, you know, that should connect. Like, it's confidence and then like levity and then like competence, because I feel like, you know, bringing in that, or I don't know if levity is the right word, but like, yeah, kind of like that lightness, like you're saying, like that reminder that like we're all going to die anyway and that nothing, the breadbaskets aren't that important and like neither are our likes and our followers and all this. Like, if you throw that in there, I mean, I feel like that really allows you to foster even more confidence.
Oh, yes. And think about it too, like, Talia, this is important. The best things in life happen when we're relaxed, right? Like, we don't go, okay, great. Okay, plan. This is how I'm going to fall asleep right now, right? You fall asleep, right? Think about that, like, when you even have pleasure with your body, right? You're relaxed.
Right. It's the only way to have pleasure with your body.
That's right. If you want to float, if you're letting someone, you want to float, it's not, it's just relax.
Oh my God. I feel like I'm getting Reiki right now.
But the best things that happen in the world, right, they happen when we're relaxed. And so why wouldn't we just constantly make that our desire, like our most desired state?
Yeah.
Like, think about the best ideas that we have. They come kind of unexpectedly, like those thoughts received when we're driving or, you know, walking or showering, like whatever it may be. It's not, okay, let me sit down. I need 10 great ideas in the next 3 minutes or my business is going to fail, right? Mm-mm. Like, huge disconnect. We just have to, this is where the levity comes in. It's like, yes, laugh, make it light because it feels good.
Yeah.
Like, and feeling good is a relaxed emotion. It's not an uptight emotion. It's a low blood pressure. Like, it's a opposite of hypertension.
It's also, if you want to go woo with Abraham Hicks and stuff, you know, that's how you manifest. You have to feel good. You have to feel joy is the highest vibration. Is that correct?
Isn't it? Yes. And so why can't we just, you know, relax? I say in my book, like, everyone's like, hustle, strive. Blah, blah, blah. Look, there's a place for that. And I love working, you know, but the way that I would say is relax. Relax is the word.
Yeah. I mean, it's so fascinating because this is literally what I do. I talk about exactly what you're talking about, but with food. I mean, that's why I pair comedy with plant eating and wellness. But even I sitting here, you know, we need reminders of this like all the time. I mean, so what do you do? I mean, there's no chance. I mean, you can, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but are you just like this all the time? What do you do to like remind yourself? Is it the screensavers of the skeletons? Like, how do you, you know, who, like, how do you get back in?
Oh, I can, oh my gosh, no, I could absolutely tailspin. This is why I have to consume so much self-help.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it has to be intentional, right? Like, I consider it almost like my number one job. My number one job for me is to just to manage my mind. And everything else is easier after that, right? I'm nicer to my husband. I'm happy to work out. My work projects seem easy. Like if I'm just in a elevated, like good mood, essentially, like as simple as that and as hard as that, right? But really like that's it. But it doesn't just like happen every day. It's not like, oh, waking up feeling great all over again. It takes an intention. It takes consciousness and knowing too that it's always going to be a bit of a decision and just leaning into the decision always.
So are there like, what do you do in the morning? Is it like a morning thing that you just like remind, like what, do you have like a routine? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had like this routine, but that was like, that could be shit. I mean, not really. I tap sometimes. I, of course.
Oh, that's what I do.
Yeah. I can, but not all. Again, I don't think you have to be perfectly consistent. I mean, some people love to be, and that's helpful for them, but I do some tapping. I always do some reading. I will find joy in everything. I think like a superpower that I have is I can find a positive in anything. And I just, I have this kind of appreciation lens where I'm like, oh, look at my view, look at my little dog. Oh, look, you know, someone gave me this tip a long time ago, like creating your to-do list, your get to-do list. So I'm like, oh, all these things that I get to do today. I'm like, oh, amazing. I get to speak to this company in London about a book giveaway. Oh, I get to speak to ABC about a potential segment. Like, it's not like, oh, I've got to do it. It's like, oh, look what I get to do because I'm alive and this is available. And, you know, I think it's like an attitude. And the more you create any like new attitude in your brain because of our circuitry, the mind is lazy, right? So it'll just repeat circuits or repeat loops. So the more you do it, the more it does become inherent, but you still always have to be conscious of it. And the way that you are conscious is if you start to feel like shit, then you're like, so, like something I need to like reassess a little bit right now.
That's why I tap so much because it's so easy like, to catch it in that moment and then just start banging on your chest.
You know? Yeah, the tapping like, works. But I throw everything at it, you know, like do it all. Do whatever works. Yeah.
Yeah. I love, I think about this and talk about this all the time when I watch The Bachelor. I am transitioning with no, you know, this is not related at all, but that's fine. You wrote in your book, the thing I say every time I watch The Bachelor or Bachelorette, you say, any contender who spends their precious limited time with the coveted Bachelor or Bachelorette talking about the other guys or girls in the competition or and how obnoxious or self-centered, aggressive, fill in the blank they are, rarely makes it to the end. And I mean, that is like every time we watch the show, my husband and I are like, God, she just blew it. Because the minute a girl, usually a girl or the guy, starts bad talking one of the other contestants to the lead, they're gone. They're history. Mm-hmm. And I love that because it doesn't matter how sexy they are. The minute they bring in that negativity, they're gone.
It ain't
not
sexy.
The minute. Sometimes they can stay for weeks, but we know they're not going to be the chosen one. And it's always the contestant who is just the chillest, like the least white knuckly is the one who gets chosen.
Yeah, not the one who's always crying, always freaking out, getting into fights. Again, relax, right? It will work for you in so many ways, right? Yes. And I've also noticed too that the person who wins, I mean, they don't say this, but you can feel it because you can feel their how they are energetically. They always kind of know that they're a prize.
Yeah, they have they have so much confidence, but it's like calm confidence. They're not like cocky. They're just like self-assured.
Yeah, often we really like the winner too because we're like, yes, this one's kind of normal, right? Because totally. They're not freaking out all the time or creating problems. They're just kind of nice, right? Kind of nice and cool. And so, I mean, I'm so happy that you've observed that too with The Bachelor. I find it so interesting. But really think about it. I mean, how are you spending your life? Is it finding problems with others or just doing you?
Yes. I mean, if there, it's the perfect metaphor for life. If you want to win at life and at The Bachelor, own your confidence, quiet confidence, no shit talking others.
Yeah, and stay out of everybody else's business. Like, live and let live.
Oh, amazing. So what is like one tangible tactical thing that somebody could do today to start, I don't know, caring less about Instagram or turning off that need for approval or anything in that realm?
I mean, there are many things, but I would say I would investigate your belief about it. Like, can Instagram make you miserable? Like, can Instagram or whatever platform make you miserable? I remember I read this in a Louise Hay book, probably one that you've read too. She said in the book, can a flat tire give you a headache? And I mean, it was funny, right? The way it was explained, but it's like the only way a flat tire can give you a headache is if it like pops off the car and hits you in the head.
Oh, yeah.
No, it pops off the car and hits you in the head. Like, it physically hits you, right?
It's so true.
A flat tire can't give you a headache. Instagram can't make you miserable. Another person can't make you feel bad.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's such an empowering way to look at it, because I feel like the app is designed, I mean, it's literally a visible scoreboard. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. I mean, so I, you know, I don't care all that much, but I feel like I'm supposed to, you know? So like, I hit 30K followers, you know, a few weeks ago. And that was a huge K I wanted for a while, because I was stuck in the 20,000s on Instagram for like literally 2 years, if not more. And I was like, you know, I got the 30K, and I had a friend who texted me, you got the 30K. And I was like, I don't care at all. And every night I write in like my journal, like the most story worthy thing of the day. Like, what was the most noteworthy thing that happened today? And it didn't even make the list. I didn't care. I didn't think about it. And all that time that I've spent in the past 2 years, oh, not at the K yet. Oh, come on. Oh, she has 34. What? Oh, my pictures are better. What the hell is this? You know, it's all for what? It's all for what? It doesn't matter. But I feel like I'm conditioned. And of course I'm not. Now I'm reframing it that I have total free will over if I care or not. But I feel like that's how we're all living. Everyone is just competing against each other. And that's what this is designed to make us do. And we have to take our power back.
I know. And like how you just said, Instagram, I've got the exact word that you used. You said it's like what did you call it? It's like a visibility.
Scoreboard.
A scoreboard. Okay. So is that a fact? Like, is it? Is it a visible scoreboard? I think about Instagram as a fun way to connect with people who like my stuff and to sell books to them at the moment. That's how I see it.
Well, that's certainly a healthier way of looking at it.
Well, there's something in that for me, and it's quite joyful, and I feel quite excited by it, you know, and then that's it. I mean, I would invite anybody who has a negative attachment to anything to question whether or not it's a fact that their belief or thought about it is true. And in almost, I would say, 100% of cases where I've done the work with this, where I've coached anybody, it's there really are no facts involved. It's all just reality is such an interpretation.
Oh, amazing. Okay. Oh. Well, I'm going to ask you a question that is going to stump you.
Oh, okay.
You already said on your site that you don't like answering this question. It's the worst question. What's your favorite book?
My own.
Oh, good one.
Stop checking your likes, lovers. That's the best book. I mean, right now I'll tell you a book that I finished that I really liked. It was Joe Dispenza's book, Becoming Supernatural. I thought that was great.
Ooh, I've heard of that. I haven't. Okay, there you go.
It's a goodie. It's a goodie. Right. It's a biggie and a goodie.
Nice. And your book too. What is also another stumper here? Your favorite plant to eat?
Oh, I need to learn more about the stuff that you teach. That's any vegetable, right?
Yeah, or fruit. Produce.
I didn't even know that. Mangoes.
I knew it was going to be something tropical because you're over there in Miami.
Yeah. Oh,
I love
Florida oranges. I tell you, they're just like orgasmic.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, on that note, thank you so much for coming on. If people want more of you, I'm sure everybody does. Where should they go to get it?
Well, you can get the book Subchecking Your Likes everywhere books are sold, and I have a lot of free confidence resources on my website, susie-moore.com.
Awesome. Susie, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun. You're the best.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. It is a wild world out there in social media land, but remember, it's not really about the app. It's about your inner algorithm, like your head and thoughts and perspectives and all that, you know? Same as it's not about the plants. It's about the non-bitch face that I encourage you to eat your Brussels sprouts with. You feel me? If you have not already gotten my brand new best-selling book, I truly have no clue what you're waiting for. I mean, really, like how Susie says living a life you like shouldn't be uncommon, neither should having the energy to do just that, which is what my book, Party in Your Plants, teaches you how to do in a tasty, planty way. It is a perfect companion to Susie's hilarious book, Stop Checking Your Likes. I mean, Party in Your Plants and Stop Checking Your Likes seems like pretty good mantras to carry forward with, if you ask me. If you want the thorough show notes for this podcast, plus links and deets to both Susie and Mai's passionately funny and very honest books, visit partyinmyplants.com/186.